I'm Tommy McNeil. House Democrats say that U.S. President Donald Trump betrayed the nation with his actions toward Ukraine, unveiling two articles of impeachment against him. AP's Sagar Magani reports from the White House.
House Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler says a president's given the highest public trust, and when that's betrayed,
he endangers the Constitution, he endangers our democracy, and he endangers our national security.
Nadler and others say the president abused his power and then obstructed Congress, with both meriting removing him from office. Republicans remain behind him.
They're not impeaching the president because they can list an impeachable offense.
Minority Whip Steve Scalise says Democrats simply want the president gone before the next election because they can't beat him.
That's the abuse of power.
A full House vote on the articles is expected by Christmas, followed by a trial in a GOP-controlled Senate, which is unlikely to convict the president. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Six tourists are now confirmed dead as a result of the volcanic eruption on New Zealand's White Island Monday. New Zealand police say the latest victim died Tuesday night. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says that rescuers hope to reach the island on Wednesday, but she does not expect any more survivors.
The Police Eagle helicopter, rescue helicopter and NZDF aircraft have undertaken a number of aerial reconnaissance flights over the island since the eruption. No signs of life have been seen at any point.
31 people were injured in the eruption, some of them seriously. Al-Shabaab militants attacked an upscale Mogadishu hotel Tuesday, causing an unknown number of casualties. Somali police and security forces cordon off the hotel as they attempted to flush out the attackers. President Trump is criticizing the FBI director Christopher Wray a day after the U.S. Justice Department's independent inspector general said it did not uncover evidence of political partisanship. This is VOA News. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Attorney General William Barr has said that U.S. Attorney John Durham's report on the Russia investigation is important because the inspector general's conclusion on political bias is not definitive.
He said, I haven't found evidence of improper motive. He did not, as contrary to what a lot of the media is reporting, he did not find there was no improper motive. He didn't find evidence of improper motive.
The Justice Department's inspector general said in that report the FBI was justified in opening an investigation in 2016 into suspected ties between Mr. Trump's election campaign and Russia, saying officials had enough evidence to authorize an inquiry. President Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo met with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov Tuesday. Pompeo says one of the key topics was Russian interference in U.S. elections.
It's unacceptable, and I made our expectations of Russia clear. The Trump administration will always work to protect the integrity of our elections, period.
Speaking through an interpreter, Lavrov said his nation did not interfere in the last U.S. presidential election.
All speculations about our alleged interference in domestic processes in the United States are baseless. There are no facts that would support that. We did not see these facts. No one has given us this proof because simply it does not exist.
It's Lavrov's first visit to Washington since May of 2017. The U.S. government misled the public about failures in the Afghanistan war, according to a published report, AP correspondent Mike Rossi.
Documents obtained by the Washington Post show ever-changing U.S. strategy and misstatements about the state of the war in Afghanistan across three White House administrations. The Post obtained thousands of pages of documents through the Freedom of Information Act and lawsuits. It accessed interviews conducted in a lessons learned project by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. The project, known as SIGAR, has produced seven reports so far. According to the Post, John Sopko, the head of SIGAR, admits the documents show the American people have constantly been lied to. Mike Gracia, Washington.
And top U.S. officials from Canada, Mexico, and the United States signed a fresh trade pact on Tuesday. The signing ceremony in Mexico City launches what may be the final approval effort for President Trump's three-year quest to revamp the 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United States sanctions 5 South Sudanese officials for allegedly murdering 2 human rights activists in 2017.
In light of the minimal progress on the peace process at this particular point, I think that these sanctions on these individuals is meant to send a strong message that the U.S. is displeased with the lack of progress.
Brian Adeba is the Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project. 2 former Algerian prime ministers get heavy jail sentences for corruption. Kenya's president seeks to review a skewed European Union trade agreement as he assumes the chairmanship of the ACP. And Uganda's Electoral Commission extends voter verification and compilation period for a week.
We have been working closely with all the stakeholders in the electoral process, especially the political parties and the civil society. So they are on board.
Malawi's president touts his country's human rights achievements, and Zimbabwe refugees in Botswana return home to a bleak future. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United States on Tuesday announced new sanctions on 5 South Sudanese officials for allegedly abducting and murdering 2 human rights activists in 2017. The U.S. Treasury Department said in a statement that the South Sudan government repeatedly used extrajudicial killings to silence dissent, limit freedom of speech and the press, and enforce the political status quo. The Treasury Department said Agre Adri, a member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, or SPLMIO, and Dong Samuel Luak, a South Sudan human rights lawyer, disappeared from Nairobi in January of 2017. South Sudan's government officials were not immediately available for comment. Brian Adebat is the Deputy Director of Policy at the Washington-based Enough Project.
I think it's a message of disappointment at the lack of progress by South Sudanese officials to hold those accused of the murder of Dong Samuel and Agre Idri responsible. And it's been quite a while now, and various reports have come out from credible outfits like the UN panel of experts that testified to the complicity of the people that were listed in the disappearance of Dong Samuel. And in light of the minimal progress on the peace process at this particular point, I think that these sanctions on these individuals is meant to send a strong message that the U.S. is displeased with the lack of progress and that something needs to be done. And it comes in the wake of the recall of the U.S. ambassador to Juba by the State Department of a couple of weeks ago. As a matter of fact, he's still here and has not returned. So those are actions that build, the sanctions build on a number of things here, the recall of the ambassador and displeasure on holding the alleged perpetrators responsible. And so that is the message it is sending.
Well, exactly. As you said, these agents, I'm assuming they were acting on behalf of the South Sudan government. And as you mentioned, very little progress has been made in the peace process. Even now, they are debating and there doesn't seem to be some agreement on the number of states. So by sanctioning these agents, are you expecting perhaps there may be more sanctions coming?
It is possible, although I say that I don't have any confidential information about how that process unfolds. I'm not privy to the inner workings of the State Department, but usually sanctions are a strategy and they are ramped up. You start with the lower level officials and you go up the chain of command. And that should be how we should view this latest measure by the State Department.
Do we know the names of the individuals that have been sanctioned, the agents?
Yes, they are listed in the statement. There are 5 of them. Most notable are the names of 2 people who have been reported in the Kenyan media as being part of or alleged to be part of a team that kidnapped Dong Samuel and Agre Idri from Nairobi.
What do you know in terms of the peace process itself? What is happening now? I know that a 100-day extension is in progress. What is happening now?
Well, the first 25 days of the 100 days have elapsed without agreement. And the contentious issue seems to be a question of state borders. That's where the disagreement lies. The government wanted 50 states, the armed opposition wanted 23, and so they could not agree. And the meeting, which was dispersed this week, is supposed to convene again in 8 days, which is sometime next week. And so after it reconvenes, it remains to be seen if the distance between the two sides has been breached in these 8 days.
Thank you very much again, Brian. It's so nice to talk with you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Brian Adeba is the Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. Uganda's Electoral Commission has extended its voter verification and compilation period for a week. The commission is compiling a voter list for the 2021 general election. The compilation, which began on November 21, was scheduled to end today, Wednesday, December 11. The commission chairperson said the extension was necessary due to a sharp rise in applications at various registration centers, as well as requests from other stakeholders. Jotem Taremwa, spokesperson for the commission, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the commission is closely working with opposition parties and civil society groups to resolve their concerns.
We began registration, what you may call update of the national voters on the 21st of last month. This one supposed to end by 11th of this month, which is tomorrow. But different stakeholders, electoral process, called for more time. Question that the Electoral Commission gives them a little more time so that those who are here there can come and register. And that is what the Electoral Commission has precisely done. Today we have released a statement confirming that registration can go on until Monday.
Jotam, we also heard reports that some people are extorting money from some local leaders about this exercise. Talk to me about it and what the Electoral Commission is doing to address this issue.
Yes, Peter, the Commission has picked those allegations. We respond that whoever doing that should stop, and if anybody is asked money, they should quickly report that officer to the police so that he can be or she can be apprehended. It is illegal. This exercise is free of charge, and nobody should be asking anyone anything or for one to either transfer or register fresh to be included on the register.
The exercise in itself is not a fresh registration of voters, correct? And how will this updating of the voter list ensure credibility of the voter list to be used for the next general election?
Well, as you have rightly said, so this is not a fresh registration. But once registered, first of all, you must be Ugandan, 18 years of age. And if you have never registered with us before, we require you to get either the national ID of your state or the recommendation from the LOC chairperson of the local in to confirm that indeed this person is a Ugandan. Is our son or daughter. But then after that, we can submit your application papers to an agency that certifies who is a guest, not before you are finally included on. So there are checks and balances in these applications to ensure that you don't have wrong people on our register.
Previous voter registration exercise or compilation sometimes get negative reaction from opposition and civil society groups. Have they raised issues, and has the Electoral Commission been able to address them as part of the transparency process that you are engaging in?
We have been working closely with all the stakeholders in the electoral process, especially the political parties and the civil society. So they are on board.
How about the voter education to explain to citizens who have turned 18 about the need to register to participate in this electoral process?
Well, we have heavily relied on the media and engagement with the selected stakeholders to process. We have used the traditional media, the print, the television, and the radios. Then we have also engaged the new media, the social media, to run the campaign and publicize our processes.
Jotam Taremwa is the spokesperson for the Ugandan Electoral Commission. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. Today is Wednesday, December 11th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has termed
current trade agreements with the European Union as imbalanced. Speaking in Nairobi during the 9th summit of the African, Caribbean and Pacific Group of States, known as ACP, Kenyatta says the EU has been an export destination for the ACP member states, even though the relationship has always not favored the members. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Giving his maiden speech as the president of the African, Caribbean and Pacific Group of States, ACP, President Uhuru Kenyatta said that the summit is aimed at ensuring sustainable development and poverty reduction. Kenyatta says the group's experience in trading with the wealthy countries has been challenging.
This has been delivered from our conviction that unity is strength and that we shall always be stronger together. Under this declaration, we will strive to know each other, appreciate each other's strengths, and work together to support our individual as well as our collective aspirations. And I have no doubt that the proposals contained in the declaration align well with the ambitions found in the draft negotiation pact that the ACP group is negotiating with our principal partner, the European Union.
The summit had attracted 18 heads of state and several ministers, including EU representatives from member states and development partners. The African, Caribbean and Pacific Group, incoming Secretary General George Pinto Chikoti, has promised to deliver under his leadership.
I'm very sure that I'll be in good hands, but I also have to thank Dr. Patrick Gomez, whom I believe has left a very big and important heritage of the ACP countries, and I will have to follow his steps to make sure that this organization stands strong. It has a lot of potential. It is big. It is great. There are many ideas, many projects, and particularly at this time that we are at the stage of reforming the organization.
Among the key issues under review at the conference are the revised agreement signed in Georgetown that created the ACP, an organization that aims to ensure sustainable development and poverty reduction. Outgoing ACP Secretary General Patrick Gomez said that leaders have called on a framework that will guide the Secretariat in achieving its agenda among the member states.
Leaders have called for the establishment of an intra-ACP and trans-regional cooperation policy framework that will guide the group's efforts towards strengthening ties and solidarity among the member states. And this will focus on our own sovereign agency that acts collectively across our 79 member states to address climate change, what we call the climate crisis, and also to address its consequences on the lives.
Also on the list are the new agreements between the European Union and the ACP governance and economic challenges, including tax evasion, the fight against money laundering, and sanctions against member states, including Zimbabwe. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
2 days before Algeria's December 12th presidential election, the country's judicial system has sentenced two former prime ministers to 12 and 15 years in prison, respectively, for corruption. Both were close allies of former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Several other top former government ministers were also given heavy sentences in the high-profile case. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
The prison sentences handed down against former Prime Ministers Ahmed Ouyahia and Abdelmalek Salal were harsh, given that no former Algerian Prime Minister has ever been put on trial before. Ouyahia received a 15-year sentence, while Salal received 12 from Algeria's Sidi Ahmed Court. Several other former ministers were given heavy sentences in the corruption case involving automobile manufacturing. Algerians are due to go to the polls Thursday to elect a new president to succeed longtime former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who stepped down in April citing poor health. Bouteflika had been expected to run for a fifth term that same month before elections were postponed due to widespread popular protests. Dr. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University, tells VOA that he thinks the sentences are intended to give Algerians the impression of the rule of law so that their votes may be less radical. The Algerian people, he says, sees the gangrenous rot of the political system and need real change to move towards a better future. Algerian political analyst Arabi Al-Zawak told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that the corruption case against the former government officials was meant to show voters that the country's military would no longer tolerate the corruption of the Bouteflika era. It is legitimate for businessmen to make a profit, he said, but public officials are expected to serve the people. Large popular protests against the elections took place Monday in the coastal city of Oran, as well as the capital, Algiers. Many Algerians believe that the five candidates running for president, two of whom are former prime ministers, do not represent a serious break with the Bouteflika era or the country's post-independence regime. Algeria's military commander, Army Chief of Staff General Ahmed Kaad Saleh, has urged Algerians to go to the polls to give the country new leaders. Many Algerians, especially the military, worry that there could be a repeat of the chaos and violence of the 1990s following an aborted presidential election won by Islamist Abbasi Medini. Election turnout at Algerian consulates in Paris and several other European capitals is reported to be light. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Malawian President Peter Mutharika says his country has made strides over the years in the area of human rights, particularly having an independent judiciary, national human rights institutions, and a strong civil society. Mr. Mutharika spoke yesterday, Tuesday, while marking International Human Rights Day, but he expressed concern that political and some civil society leaders are using the country's youth to perpetrate violence. Malawi has been engulfed in protest since the country's May 21, 2019 presidential election. Ngemi Kalilani is the spokesperson for President Mutharika.
What the president actually meant is that in taking stock, we have to look at both the progress and the challenges that we have faced. We started with the progress to say that it is quite pleasing to note that over the years, since 1994, successive governments that have taken over administration in Malawi have made sure that Malawians enjoy their human rights. Besides, most importantly, that one of the very important indicators of the progress we have made in the area of protecting human rights is the civil space that the government, including his administration now, has always availed to civil society space. In Malawi, we have put a very robust civil society culture, and the president said that is a very strong indicator of our democracy that is growing. But he went on to say that as much as there is such good indicators, but there are also some gray areas that need to be looked into very seriously.
As you know, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, in the midst of these protests about the election results, have been accusing your government of human rights violations, particularly the police. The president acknowledged that something is wrong with human rights issues in Malawi.
Yes, he acknowledged that there is something wrong. What the president said is there are political leaders and civil society leaders that have decided to be using the banner of human rights as a tool to radicalize the youth in this country. And that has created a new culture in our society in which we are seeing an increase in instances of violence against each other, violence against the police, violence against the state's property. And the president said this is very worrisome because the radicalization is coming from people that are holding very important decisions, people that are supposed to be opinion leaders in the civil society, but apparently are the ones in the forefront mobilizing the youth into violent acts. We have seen recently after the May 21 general election that the Human Rights Defenders Coalition, in collaboration with the My Congress Party and the UTM, have been mobilizing people to go to the street. And at each and every so-called demonstration that they have organized, it has turned out to be violent. People's properties have been vandalized, police officers beaten, people not belonging to opposition parties, houses broken into, chaos, lawlessness. And under the banner of people protesting the election, people expressing the right to expression as in the Constitution.
Mgemi Kalilani is the spokesperson for Malawian President Peter Mutharika. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Botswana has repatriated 135 Zimbabwean refugees, the majority who fled political persecution at the height of a violent and deadly 2018 presidential election. Some of the 700 refugees still remain in camps, reluctant to return home, citing fears of political persecution. From Habaruni, Mkundise Dube has more.
The Zimbabwean refugees in Botswana were caught between a rock and a hard place. The Botswana government gave the refugees an ultimatum: register for voluntary repatriation by December 31 or face forced removals. The refugees told the United Nations High Commission on Refugees, UNHCR, that conditions in Zimbabwe were not conducive for their safe return. But instead, the UNHCR offered the migrants 300 bula per person, food rations for 3 months and transport to the Zimbabwe border. A 55-year-old returnee who preferred anonymity for fear of victimization says she and her cohorts now face a bleak future. Her homeland is in the middle of one of the worst economic crises.
I can go there, but I don't have a shelter there. I don't have money to eat. I don't have money to let my children go to school. There is no water, no electricity, nothing, no food. It was better when we were this side. We were being given everything. We were eating.
While some of the refugees are already planning a new life after years away from home, others like Begimpilo Weza are not prepared to return. An opposition supporter, Weza, who fled Zimbabwe in the aftermath of the bloody 2008 election, says it is not the right time to go home.
People might think that Zimbabwe, maybe after the change of government, it has changed. But the government that is still ruling is the same government, ZANU-PF. The system that is still there is the same system that is still ruling. So there is no change at all.
Wasu Chibi, a staunch supporter of the opposition MDC party, feels the host government has let the refugees down by repatriating them. He says they would rather wait for forced removals.
Botswana as a country are saying Zimbabwe is a free and safe zone. This is contrary to the Geneva Convention of 1951, whereby there should be an agreement with all the stakeholders. So we are saying, let it be clear with the Botswana and UNHCR what they are doing. There's no cessation clause yet declared upon Zimbabwe, and they are busy putting people's lives at risk.
The two countries' governments say they are satisfied the situation in Zimbabwe is conducive for the refugees' safe return. The UNHCR in recent years scaled down financial support to host governments. This has triggered an increase in the repatriation of refugees. Nearly 800 Namibian refugees were recently deported from Botswana. The country now hosts fewer than 2,000 refugees from several countries across Africa. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaruni, Botswana.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. The United States on Tuesday announced new sanctions on 5 South Sudanese officials for allegedly abducting and murdering 2 human rights activists in 2017. The U.S. Treasury Department said in a statement that the South Sudan government repeatedly used extrajudicial killings to silence the dissent, limit freedom of speech and the press, and enforce the political status quo. No South Sudan official were immediately available for comment. And Uganda's Electoral Commission has extended its voter verification and compilation period for a week. That is it for this Wednesday, December 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.